What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, mental health, finance, and business. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. Now, let's go on and introduce today's guest. I'm excited to have this brother on the show. This brother here, if you're a business owner, CEO, a lot of CEOs listen to the show. A lot of authors have been guests and listen to the show. A lot of coaches, wellness coaches, a lot of business owners, period, listen to the show. So this is the show for you today, guys. I have a guest. This brother's name is Marquell Russell. Let me run down some of this brother's credentials real quick. This brother's an author. He's also known as the king of client attraction. He's a rapid business growth strategist and advisor. Check this out. This brother's clients have generated over $1 billion in revenue. And this brother's a multimillionaire, by the way. So without further ado, Marquell Russell, welcome to Black Men Sundays, brother. How you doing?
I'm excited to be here, fellas. I'm excited to be here. I'm honored, man. I'm looking forward to this.
Definitely, man. I could not wait to have you on. And one thing that I left out, this brother knows how to scale businesses. So for people that don't know how to scale a business, my first question for you, because we're going to just jump right into this thing.
Let's do it.
What's the difference between I'm growing my business versus scaling my business?
So that's a great question. And I don't think enough people ask that. So growth. So all right, scale. Let's go backwards. So scale is actually multiplication and duplication. So it's like, all right, the growth phase is, let's say you start a business. Let's say you start a business selling pens and you're going out door to door. Let's say it's just old school and you're selling pens, just you individually selling pens. How we begin to scale is now I go out and I get you on my team, and now you actually go out and start selling pens as well, right? Our same pens. And then we bring Eric on. Eric starts selling pens. So now I've been able to multiply myself because you all are out selling pens as well. And now you all can actually go sell pens, and I'm no longer selling pens. But we're still getting the double or triple the amount of pens that I actually sold by myself. That's scale. Growth is me going from, let's say I used to sell 10 pens a day, then I went to selling 20 pens a day, but that was because I was putting in more work and putting in more hours to get to 20 pens a day. I brought you on and Eric on, and we went to 20 pens a day without me doing any work. That scale, growth, is me actually putting the effort in to drive growth in the business. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. And thanks for clearing that up, because I was kind of like, I thought they were the same thing, but that's why I have guests come on Black.
Yeah, they're used interchangeably for sure.
Definitely, definitely. And my next question for you, man, you know, when companies want to scale their business up, obviously they can hire you, but at what level or what's the minimum revenue that you will help a business scale?
So over the years, we work with businesses all across the board, right? Individuals in the startup stage, individuals already at 10 million plus looking to grow, and everything in between. And then we made a shift where we were like, all right, we're going to specifically target in on businesses who make at least 30K to 100K per month or more, right? And help them scale. But what we found is, well, even when we went that particular direction, what I found is that revenue targeting isn't the best targeting. Because some individuals who are making 30K to 100K per month or 200K, 300K, 500K a month, they're still experiencing some of the challenges of individuals who are making $10,000 a month, $20,000 a month, $30,000, $50,000 a month. So we kind of shifted from revenue-based targeting. And we more so say our ideal clients who we can serve the best is those who are already amazing at what they do. They're already serving clients. They're already doing some things. They're just trying to figure out, okay, I know I'm the best at what I do. Enough people just don't know who I am, right? So some of them are in that phase. We call it the stabilized phase. And then some of them are like, hey, we're killing it. We're bringing in clients. We're killing it revenue-wise, but we just got a cap in terms of growth. So if we bring on more clients, it's more work, and we don't have systems, team, processes, operations in place so we can actually scale. So we call that the scale-ready phase and then the stabilized phase. So it's not necessarily a revenue thing. We just want them to ideally be we mainly work with service-based business owners. And then if they're selling something, they're already amazing at what they do, they're serving clients, getting great results for clients, and they're like, okay, I want to just take things to the next level.
I got you. Now, let's say someone has a business, but because I've had a lot of brothers and sisters come on this show,
You know, because when I go online, entrepreneurship looks awesome. All we having lunch at noon, we chilling. But then the guests come on, they're like, "Nah, man, it ain't nothing like that, man. I'm cleaning the toilets. I'm the bookkeeper. I'm the host. I'm doing the whole thing." So a lot of people get what they call burned out in their business. So for you, how do you calm the, I would say, the internal CEO or the internal business owners flame down to say, "Listen, man, you working too hard. Are you overworking?" Like, how do you get them to, confide in you for you to be able to take them to the next level?
So a couple of things. So I think a big thing is, to your point, a lot of individuals, they see on the internet and entrepreneurship just looks so glamorous, right? And people quit their 9 to 5 and they're like, "Man, I'm gonna go into entrepreneurship so I can have more freedom." And what they find is they find themselves going from working 9 to 5 to working 24/7, right? So they quit their job. They was working 9 to 5, had benefits, could go home, leave work at home. I mean, leave work at the office and all that. They come into entrepreneurship. Now they're working 24/7. They actually make less. Yes, they're their own boss, but they're their own employee as well, right? And then they're getting paid way less because now they're working 24/7 compared to 9 to 5, and all those different things. So the biggest thing, we typically like to dial it back, and we say, okay, what is your goal? Like what's your goal over the next 12 months, for example? And typically, most individuals are going to default right into revenue. So they'll say, "Okay, I want to make $1 million," just for example. And I'll say, "Okay, great." Typically, when I ask that question, the number that they give me is their top line revenue number, like how much I want the business to make top line revenue. Not like profit or anything, but that's the top line number. So I'll say, "Okay, great. Is that top line? Is that profit? Is that take home or whatever?" And typically, like I said, it's top line. So I'll say, "Okay, well, how much do you actually want to take home after all said and done?" Many times they haven't really thought about that. So then we got to go through and like, all right, let's do the math. Like only to cover your lifestyle, how much do you need to personally take home? Because most business, I mean, I've worked with business, I won't use the word most just kind of loosely. But if a lot of business owners I talk to, they're doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million or more, and they don't even pay themselves a set salary. They pay themselves based on how they did that month in the business, right? Which is a dangerous place to be. So we look at, all right, what do you want to take home that'll cover your lifestyle? And then we do the math on what do you need to take home to cover your ideal lifestyle? And then once we get clear on that, then it's like, all right, you want to hit that number and what? So for what I mean by and what, because we don't want you to hit a revenue number and sacrifice everything else. So for example, you want to hit your revenue number and be able to take the kids to school, just for example. You want to be able to hit your revenue number and be able to go to church on Sundays. You want to be able to hit your revenue number and go be at Bible study on Wednesdays or Tuesdays. You want to be hit your revenue number and be at the gym 2 or 3 days a week, right? You want to hit the revenue number and have date nights or whatever. So we build that out, right? And now we know what we're optimizing for, because our survival mechanism is typically going to tell us the route to get to our goals is doing more, which leads to burnout, like you mentioned. So it's like we don't want to optimize for doing more. We want to optimize for getting closer. So if we know, okay, you want to hit this revenue goal, take home. Now we know for you to take that home, the business needs to make this top line, and it needs to make this profit. So now we know based on your marketing, your pricing structure, how many clients you want to bring on, all that. These are the things that's going to lead to that. And we know that you want to hit this goal while still taking your kids to school in the morning, while still being done by 4 o'clock, so you can help them with their homework and, be ready for dinner, and being able to go to church on Sundays and be able to do Bible study and blah, 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 whatever the other things are. So now every decision you make going forward, we got to run it through that filter. Does that make sense? So now, so we zoom out, and now from there, we can decide, all right, this way we're not just haphazardly just hiring people. Now we can say, okay, then we take them through this process called, all right, now we're clear on that. Now we got to figure out, okay, what do we eat? And eat is an acronym. So the first E is what do we eliminate altogether, right? Because sometimes people will try to go out and hire people for something that should just be eliminated altogether. So if you go hire somebody for something that should be eliminated altogether, now you're paying out and it's cutting into your profit margins and it's an expense when this thing could actually just be eliminated. So then once we figure out what needs to be eliminated, whatever you're doing or whatever members of your team are doing, what can be eliminated? And then the A is automate. So it's like, okay, what are you currently doing or somebody on your team is doing that could actually be automated? Because again, we don't want to hire people in to do something that could actually be just be automated. And then then once we go through that, those two things, then we figure, okay, now what can be transferred? What are you doing right now that can be transferred to somebody else? Or what are people on your team doing that could actually be transferred to other people? Because again, we want to optimize for that big picture that we just designed a little while ago. So now, okay, what's on your plate? So let's say, for example, before we did the eat process, you're working 60 hours, right? Once we did that, it actually brought you down from 60 hours to 30 hours. Now you got 30 hours back in your week, right? Not only that, you eliminated a lot of stuff, you automated a lot of stuff, so that also probably increased your profit margins. So without even generating no new revenue, right? So we're already closer to the goal without really even putting in really any more ad spend, more phone calls, any of that type of stuff, but just kind of optimizing, getting clear on our vision and optimizing that, and then optimizing based on that eat process.
In the intro, I said your clients have generated over $1 billion in revenue, and you're called the king of client attraction. I can see why with, over $1 billion, but honestly, though, business-wise, why do they call you the king of client attraction?
I got introduced to this whole what I call legitimate business. I got introduced to I started network marketing at first. I don't know if you're familiar with network marketing. You familiar? So network marketing is like it's an MLM. Some people call it MLM. Some people call it network marketing. Some people call it a pyramid scheme where they recruit you into a company, you pay to get in, then you go recruit other people and so forth and so on, right? So that was my whole introduction to this whole world. And then I had to, but they didn't teach you marketing. They just taught you to go talk to your friends and family. And I was like, man, where I'm from, like my friends and family aren't interested in like this type of stuff, right? But I was like, this is my way out the streets to like get on a legit path. So from there, I got introduced to online marketing and like how to generate leads and so forth. And what I discovered is when I started buying these courses and going through these trainings, everybody made stuff like it seemed like they was making it super complicated. It seemed like they was leaving stuff out. Everything just seemed incomplete. And then as I started testing and doing different stuff, I began to crack the code. And then people started reaching out to me, asking me to teach them. And then when I was teaching individuals, they actually started duplicating and getting results. And I realized that my gift was actually teaching, taking something that's super complicated and then making it very simple. Because it's one thing to be able to do a thing, it's another thing to be able to teach it, and it's a rare set of skills to be able to do both. So I had respectfully simplified and mastered this process of being able to take complete strangers through an automated sequential process where they actually pull out their card and give you money. And I was able to show individuals who were complete beginners this entire process, all the way up to savvy business owners and marketers. The youngest person I've taught to do this and to build a $1 million business was a 12-year-old named Christian. I helped him. He told me, he was like, Mr. Marquell, by the time I turn 13, I want to make $100,000. And by the time he turned 13, he made $103,000. By the time he turned 15 or 16, he was making a couple hundred grand a month using the same process. So I always tell people, like, our process is so simple, a 12-year-old can do it.
Wow, that's amazing, man. I'm blown away, man. But let me ask you this, because a lot of business owners that's come on this show that send me emails, a lot of them say they have issues with their pricing. They feel like, okay, they want to charge this amount, but they may say no, so I'll lower it down some. So one thing about you that I've learned just in these few minutes being on the call, you seem very you're very charismatic. You know what I mean? So I can tell that you don't have a problem charging XYZ and they're just, okay, I'll pay it. But how do you get people comfortable saying, you know what, I'm charging you 5,000, but you know what, I'll give it to you for 1,500. Like, how do you get out of that zone where I'm afraid they're going to say no and I don't want to lose that business?
So great question. I think the biggest thing, here's what we know. There are some people who aren't going to buy at any price, right? So you can charge $1 and everybody still isn't going to buy. You can charge 50 cent and everybody still isn't going to buy, right? So it really boils down, because most business owners, well, again, I don't want to use the word most because that's just a general statement. A lot of business owners I've spoken to is they just pulled their pricing just out of like thin air. So they'll look at the marketplace and they'll see, okay, this person is charging, these are the higher price people, and then these are the people who charge the lowest. And then they either do one or two things, in many cases. They either say, I'm gonna price myself right in the middle, Or they say, I'm going to lowball the lowest priced person in the market, generally speaking. So what happens is when you price based, when you compete based on price alone, it's just a race to the bottom. So you're like, okay, oh, they're charging that. They charge $99, I'm gonna charge $89. Oh, they're charging $89, I'm gonna charge $59. And it's just like a race to the bottom. And then it's a race to the bottom that you might win. Because a lot of, again, some individuals, they aren't pricing with profit margin in mind. So now they're making a lot of sales, but they're like, dang, I'm not making no money. Right? So I give you an example. So my first business, the first industry I was in growing up, I was in the pharmaceutical industry, right? So I jumped out the streets early selling drugs the whole nine yards. And my big homie at the time, you know, I grew up, I'm on the hip hop just like you. So I grew up on like UGK, Outkast, Master P, the whole No Limit Squad, the whole nine. And one of the things we always heard in the music was like, you want to have the fattest sax on the block. So that was what I was on. So when I went to see my big homie and I was going to re-up, after a few times, he was like, man. And it wasn't even because I owed him, because I was just going to buy what I was going to buy and I was just doing my thing. But he was like, the idea is to come back and like eventually be getting more. And he was like, let me see the sax. And I showed him, he was like, you're putting too much in these, right? He was like, every bag should actually weigh something. He was like, even the sandwich bag actually weighs something. And he was like, and everything that goes in the sandwich bag should also weigh something. So he was like, so if you're breaking down an ounce or whatever the case may be, it should back out and you should be able to see your money once it's all backed up. And I'm like, oh, because again, I was pricing and I was bagging and I was distributing everything based on what I heard, right? But I wasn't doing it based on math. And I wasn't doing it with profit margin in mind. It was just transactional. So I was just getting excited and I was getting my payoff just through the transactions of just doing it. And I was having some money in my pocket, but when I really look at it was just the money that I already had spent to re-up. So I wasn't really making no money back in profit. Does that make sense? So that's the same thing that a lot of entrepreneurs do. It's just transactional, but they really haven't sat down and ran the numbers. So I asked the entrepreneur, I said, okay, look, or do you consider yourself the best at what you do? Many times, they're gonna say, well, yeah. And I'll say, okay, great. Well, and I'll say, do you believe that you're underpriced? More often than not, they'll be like, yes. And I'll say, well, does it feel good to wake up every day and build a business knowing that you're underpriced? And they'll say, well, no. And I'll say again, do you believe that you're the best? And they'll say, yes. And I'll say, okay, great. Here's what we know about human psychology and buyer psychology. We know that the best is never the cheapest, right? And we also know that the cheapest is never the what? The best. We all make a know that. And how do we know that? Even when we go grocery shop. I know when I was growing up, we used to have like the Piggly Wiggly across the train tracks. And we had the Jolly Green Giant brand, and then we had the Piggly Wiggly brand. Just based on the Piggly Wiggly brand being cheaper than the Jolly Green Giant brand, we automatically assumed that the Piggly Wiggly brand was less quality than the Jolly Green Giant brand because it was priced differently. So it's the same thing across the board when we're buying it. We're like, oh, dang, that's only that. It must be something wrong with it, right? It's like, all right, hey, I got this Mercedes-Benz. It's a 2025 AMG joint with the kit, peanut butter guts, blah, 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 blah. You can get the whole thing now for 5,000. Oh, the first step, we're gonna be like, what's wrong with it? Right, like what's wrong with it? If you're gonna give me this whole joint, it's normally $150,000. You're gonna let me get it for 5,000? What's wrong with it? Is it stolen? Is the engine in it? All these things. So it's the same thing in business. If you're telling people that what you offer is so dope, and you got this service, you're helping people do X, Y, Z, blah, 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 and you're gonna help them do it for pennies on the dollar, you automatically trigger a buyer's defense mechanism, whereas like, it ain't, it must not be good if it's so cheap.
The back part of that question was the folks that are, they get hesitant when it's time to talk about prices. Oh, you're too high. Oh, I don't know. Like, how do we get over that vulnerability? Because, it's our business, but sometimes I feel like people can kind of let the customer drive their prices down. So how do we stay firm and not, lose it?
Again, entrepreneurs have to, small business owners gotta stop thinking small, thinking like small business owners. Like, people don't go, okay, so people can't go to Apple and do that. They don't go to the Apple store and be like, hey, I'm in the market to get a MacBook. And they're like, all right, cool, the new MacBook 2500 fully loaded or 3500 fully loaded or whatever. You can't be like, ah, man, that's too high, man. Can I give you 1500? It's like they're gonna run you up out of there. You can't go to Louis Vuitton and be like, hey, them Louis joints, I want to get them. They like, how much are those? They're like, well, I'm gonna be 800 for the shoes. And you're like, oh man, I can go to Nike. I can go to Nike and get some all white Air Force 1s for 150. Like, can y'all? They're like, no, we'll go to Nike and get the all white Air Force 1 for 150. This is Louis Vuitton, right? You can't go to Delta and want to book a flight and be like, hey, I'm trying to get to Dubai, and they like, all right, cool. It's gonna be 1500 round trip. You can't be like, oh man, that's kind of high, man. Like, can I give you 500? You know what I'm saying? It's like you can't do that with no other real businesses. But a lot of times, small business owners, if they see themselves as small business owners, they're willing to take less. And when they do that, they actually just set themselves up to lose, because now you're not making no money, number one, and now you're just gonna attract more of those type of individuals. And if you ain't making, if you're building a business and ain't really making no money, I mean, it's kind of pointless anyway.
Got you. And just quick sidebar question. You said Air Force Ones. I'm a shoe guy. Are we talking on the white on white lows, mids, or the high highs?
I'm an all white Lowe's type of guy.
Okay, yeah, I'm a mid kind of guy. All right, let's jump
Yeah,
back into it. Let's jump back. I just had to slide that in real quick.
I like to keep me an all white fresh pair of Lowe's for sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm more the mid because my ankle's kind of big. Them lows don't look good on mine.
That's fair.
Unless I got on some pants, but you know, anyway.
That's fair.
All right, so let's kick it up a little bit. So for the CEOs out there that's listening to the show, give them some techniques of what the CEOs that you work with that are successful and have been able to scale their business, what habits or strategies that you can share with the CEOs that are listening to this show right now to say, you know what, you know, this is a rough economic climate. You know, or you know, we have employees, we're, you know, but it's a little rough right now. So what techniques and tips can you share with those brothers and sisters listening?
The way we like to operate is like we have like these different operating systems in different businesses, right? Because like a business is a machine, and it's a machine that's made up of systems, right? So the first mach this is something that any CEO who's listening to my voice right now can implement. We call it a UOS. So I'll give you a quick story. So Howard Schultz, this is the guy who started Starbucks. He Starbucks was like growing like crazy. He ended up stepping away, and Starbucks start to like tank. You know, stock prices start going down, profits going down, the whole nine yards. He was operating as chairman at the time, so Howard ended up stepping back into the company. And I ask individuals when I'm talking to like entrepreneurs at events or coaching clients or whatever, and I'm like, hey, what do you think, Howard? What do you think the first thing that Howard did to turn the business around? And then typically people will say, well, he focused on profit. He focused on marketing. He focused on building a better team. He focused on this. And I was like, nope. He actually focused on himself first and like systemizing his personal performance, right? And his personal self-care. So a system that we give to CEOs and we help them install is what we call a UOS. So it's a U operating system, right? Because what we believe and what we found is that a fully optimized business has to be ran by a fully optimized CEO. A fully optimized business has to be ran by a fully optimized CEO. So if you're showing up to business tired, under-rested, you're underhydrated, undernourished, you're underregulated, all those things, and you snap real easy. How are you going to lead a team, right? It's like entrepreneurs are athletes. Like literally, entrepreneurs are athletes. As an entrepreneur, small business owner, I don't care if you're just starting today, you have the opportunity to earn at the same level as a LeBron James or a Steph Curry or whatever. You literally do with this business idea that you're birthing. How the biggest difference is you have to function like an athlete. Athletes don't grind 24/7, right? Athletes, they have a seasonal approach, right? We know that. We got basketball season, we got football season, we got baseball season, right? So, but even on off season, they have things that they do to keep them on point, but they ain't grinding 24/7. LeBron sleep 10 hours a night, right? So they're regimented. As entrepreneurs, most entrepreneurs grind, many entrepreneurs grind 24/7, 365. And I know we live in this hustle culture. But if we look at LeBron James on the court, we can see him run up and down the court. and we can see the intensity. If we look at Serena Williams for the ladies, we can see Serena running across the court. We can see her intensity, right? As entrepreneurs, you can't really see our intensity. Like, we could be sitting at a dinner table with our family, and internally, we're still running 100 miles an hour, right? We're sitting at the table, but we're not really there, though, right? We can go to bed at night. We'll sleep, but you don't really rest. So you wake up after 7, 8, 9 or so hours of sleep, but you're still exhausted because your body didn't rest, right? So what do we do to alleviate? And so I read this article, it was on Wall Street Journal, and it talked about how 1,900 CEOs left their jobs last year, and 19 of them died in the office, right? And it talked about how many of them who had a down season, they actually look older than those who are up season, because entrepreneurs typically tie their personal identity into the success or the lack thereof of their business. If their business is winning, from an identity level, they feel like they're winning. If their business is in a down cycle, from an identity standpoint, it takes a hit because the business took a hit. And now that affects how they show up as a dad, as a father, and the list goes, I mean, as a husband, that's what I meant, and as a father, and the list goes on. So what's the system that we put in place? That's what we come with the UOS. So the UOS is probably about 7 parts. The first thing is having a morning success ritual, right? So when you wake up in the morning, what do you do? I've worked with thousands and thousands of entrepreneurs. Many of them, the first thing they do when they wake up in the morning is what y'all think? They grab their phone. First thing they do, grab their phone, start scrolling social media, checking email, haven't even got out of bed yet. Start scrolling social media. Imagine opening up social media and the first thing you do is see something negative. That has now set the tone for the rest of your day. So that first part of your day, it really sets the tone for the rest of the day. And the cool thing is your morning success ritual actually starts the night before. So this is the second, this what this is the one of the other parts of the UOS. It's like your end of day wrap up ritual. Like, what do you do before you go to sleep? So one of the things we when we're working with clients is like, okay, a pre-sleep ritual could be something simple as drinking some chamomile tea, right? Because that's going to begin to relax your body. A shower with like some lavender in it, because again, that's going to begin to relax your body. Some magnesium. This is all helping to relax your body. Even sitting down, like writing what's 3 wins you had for the day, right? Writing those down. Because if we don't focus on our wins, because we do this event with brothers once a month, and it's called Brunch with the Bros, and we're like, hey, which wins? And typically, brothers got to think about their wins because they're not tracking them and they're not conscious of them regularly. But if we ask, hey, what's going wrong in life right now? Or what are you losing? Typically run those down pretty quickly. So it's like, what's a simple end of night ritual? Some lavender in the shower, some magnesium, some chamomile tea. I got this thing that I put on my eyes. I used to see it growing up, but I didn't really understand, like on TV. But I got this thing I put across my eyes and it blacks the whole room out. So everything is like pitch black. Because again, one of your greatest productivity hacks as an entrepreneur is rest, right? Again, I know this goes totally against everything in hustle culture, but if you're gonna show up as a leader, like your highest leverage is your thinking, your decision-making, and your leadership. And you can't do that optimally if you're tired. So a morning success ritual, an end of night ritual, also quarterly and annual vacations. Well, again, when I speak to many entrepreneurs, I'm like, hey, when was the last time you took a vacation? And they're like, vacation? So one of the things we track when we work with clients is days off, right? Like, that's a metric. Like, how many days off? What is your target days off this year? And typically they'll be like, what do you mean days off? And I'm like, well, days where you don't actually work. And they're like, well, if I'm not working, what do I do on those days? And I'm like, what are the things that you enjoy doing? And like, well, I enjoy working. And like, well, now you're addicted to working. Right? What else do you enjoy doing? You got kids, you got a wife, you got some other things. Like, what hobbies do you have? And I've had clients that came to us and they couldn't answer that question. But after a while, they began to figure out that, I like traveling. I am actually married and I actually do want to work on this marriage and I do like her, right? Or I don't. But I've been numbed out on the business that I haven't even been able to pick my head up and see, do I actually like the situation I am? Oh, I do actually got kids that's growing up like crazy that I just, you know what I'm saying? So like really figuring that out and like what, like really optimizing, like what are my days off? Am I scheduling self-care and vacations just like I schedule meetings, right? And sales calls and things of that nature. So it's just a few elements of that UOS that I would recommend every CEO install.
Oh, great information. CCOs, I got y'all too. I just want to kind of go back real quick because I mean, you're real eloquent, great speaker, man. And like I
Thank
said,
you.
you've generated over $1 billion in revenue. How were you able to establish that business where, okay, you have this company has faith in me to do that? Like, are you doing this yourself? Are you using AI? I kind of want to just go back to when you got that first client, like, how did you build this business up? Because I mean, I'm looking at your resume and you have a ninth grade education. So I'm like,
Yeah.
what? How are you doing this? Let's go.
For sure. So basically, so the way I started doing it, so I use a very sneaky form of marketing. I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag because I want everybody else to do it as well. I call it proving to people you can help them by just actually helping them. So one of the things that I do, I basically create a moat around me and our company, is my one of our strategies is to out teach the market. So if you go on our Instagram, you go on our YouTube, you go on our Facebook, TikTok, wherever, we have tons of free content, right? Tons of free, not fluff, like free. I got a show called the Strategic Scale Show, and I literally sit down with business owners and we do live deep dives on their business, right? And people get to watch in behind the scenes as I'm guiding them on a bit. That's what I do now. But from the very beginning, when I learned how to do something, I created a video and I taught it. So for example, when I learned how to generate my first lead, I made a video. Hey, I learned how to generate leads on Facebook. Here's how I did it. Once I had a 10 lead day, I created a video. Hey, look, man, I just generated 10 leads. I did this one strategy, helped me get 10 leads a day. Let me show you how I did it. Hey, I learned how to do this. I learned how to build out landing pages with this new software. And then when I came into the game, this is probably almost 15 years ago, it wasn't as many black quote unquote influence. I don't necessarily call myself an influencer, but it wasn't as many black voices. It was mostly people like white guys, white women that had been way ahead of the game. But there was little me came on. I got goals, tattoos, dropped out of high school in 10th grade, got an Atlanta accent. I was like, am I even gonna fit in here? Are people even gonna listen to me? But I just started teaching what I was learning. And as I was teaching what I was learning, people actually start reaching out. I mean, I talk to still to this day, people will see my videos and they'll be like, man, I saw you like a year ago. And they're like, hey, I saw the goals and I saw the tattoos. And I was like, I don't know, man, he just don't got the look. But 6, 9, 12 months, I was like, man, you still around, you talking the talk. You don't got the look, but you talking the talk, and the talk, you talking the talk and you showing the receipts, it's undeniable, right? So when you're leading with that, and I heard Will Smith say something so powerful the other day. I was watching this interview, and I've never said this, but I think it's very true to me as well. I've always valued being authentic than being number one, right? So I'm like, if I'm showing up as me 100%, I'm just teaching what I'm learning. I'm not teaching, I ain't no expert, I'm a student. As I'm learning, I'm teaching it. And then it's like, hey, if you want me to help you implement this, reach out and let me know. If not, take this to go implement it. So that's still my same strategy 15 years later. I'm teaching it. Hey, take this, go implement on your own. Or if you want to get results faster, reach out and let me know. Me and my team can actually help you do it. And that's literally been the strategy forever.
Wow. Yeah, man. We getting a lot of information from you today, man. I'm gonna work you today, man.
Let's
And
get it.
let's
Let's get
talk
it.
about in your business though, 'cause you know AI is a big move. I've been saying, you know, get educated in AI. The time is now. Are you using AI in your business?
Yes. And I want to point something out. Like, when right now, I think AI is just marketed at another level. But we've been using AI. Like, even right now, a lot of people are talking about AI assistants. Y'all been hearing about that? Like, if you use Siri, Siri is an AI assistant. Like, Siri's been out. If you use, I think Android got their version of it. I forget what it's called. But that's an AI assistant, right? If you use Gmail and somebody sends you emails, Gmail gives you like three or four different answers that you can choose from, like pre-scripted answers based on the email. And you can just click on that answer. That's AI, right? So we've literally been using AI for the past several years. It's just marketed different, right? So now they got, the chat GPTs and things of that nature, the language learning models. And I think those are handy as thought partners. I think AI is a great enhancer, not a great replacer, so to speak. It's a great enhancer though. So if you're already doing great stuff, it's going to help make it more efficient, right? It's going to help make it help. It can help make more systemized. But if you aren't doing anything and you think AI is going to come through and just, you know, make what you're not doing better, it's not going to be the case, right? And I think also a huge opportunity is right now why everybody is trying to use AI to like replace any communication with actual human beings. When you focus on brand and like high touch relationships, that's the thing that's going to put you ahead of the game these days. Because if you think about it, human beings don't like to engage with AI. So if you're selling a product and you want AI to do all the work, it's going to kill your conversions. How do we know? So I did an event with our clients last year, September, and everybody was asking about AI. How do we use AI? I heard about this AI, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, great. So we talked about it. And I was like, let me ask y'all a question. I was like, anytime you call your credit card or you call your Comcast service or anybody, and the AI thing answers and it says, hey, I'm such and such AI. I'm gonna direct you in a point to get you to where you wanna be. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, what's the first thing that y'all do? Everybody in the room collectively yelled out, representative, representative. And I was like, exactly, because you don't want to be talking to AI, you want to be talking to a human being. So I think what we got to do is we got to make the automation and humanization connection. So AI and automation is good to start the process, but as quickly as possible, we got to add some humanization into it because right now, more than ever, the world is disconnected. The world is more connected than ever while also being more disconnected than ever. So the more you can add humanization to it, that's what really helps you stand out above and beyond the crowd, especially if you want to be a premium provider in your specific marketplace.
Being a rapid business growth strategist, how do you cater to each client? Because, you know, each client's doing different businesses, different industries. How do you cater to them specifically to make sure that their business scales?
Businesses aren't technically, I'm just going to push back just a little bit. So businesses aren't necessarily different. They do have nuance though. Right. So, and we mainly work with like service-based business owners. So this could be attorneys, this could be therapists, this could be coaches, consultants, agency owners, speakers, CPAs, CFO firms, you know, massage therapists, the list goes on and on and on. Right. There now, all those businesses have nuance. On a surface level, they look different, but in reality, they aren't. We know they require a couple things. We know they require a marketing system. We know they require us. It's kind of like if you look at a 747 jet. A 747 jet has four engines, right? Can it run optimally if it loses an engine? Yes, that's why they gave it four, just in case it loses the engine while it's in the air. Businesses are the same. It needs four engines. It needs a marketing engine. It needs a sales engine. It needs a fulfillment engine, and then like a finance engine and a fulfillment engine. Right. So typically we want to look at those four things and see which one of those engines aren't optimized at this particular point. And typically a business is going to have sales process. They either need some help immediately with marketing or with sales, or they're killing it in marketing and sales. Now they have a delivery issue because they got more demand than they can actually handle, or they got a finance issue where they need to optimize their finances, where they're like, hey, we're making a lot of money, but we just don't know where it's at. Right. So we can figure out which one of those we focus on first. So do y'all remember in math, like fifth grade, where we learned the order of operations and they taught us PEMDAS, PEMDAS. And it was like, you can actually answer all the math questions right in this PEMDAS, in this order of operations. But if you do it out of order, you'll still get the answer wrong. Right. So in business, it's the same thing. A lot of times people are trying to do, they're doing the right things. They're just doing it in the wrong order. So when we bring in on a client, the first thing we're going to do is an analysis of like what's already going on. And then we can actually see the big lever points. And we can say, okay, is it a marketing thing? Is it a sales thing? Is it an operation thing? Is it a finance thing? And then we can focus on fixing that. But we know typically when you fix one thing in a business, eventually it's going to break something else. Kind of like an old school. I don't know if y'all used to drive old schools in the back of the day or like familiar with old schools. Like if you're driving an old school and then you got to get the engine fixed, the OGs and the mechanics would be like, hey man, you're gonna end up having to get the transmission fixed too. Cause you got this new engine on this thing. So it's like once we fix the marketing and now you got more leads than you can handle coming in, we're gonna have to optimize your sales system because how do we now touch all these leads that's coming in? And I was like, hey, now once we're killing it on the sales side, you've doubled, tripled, quadrupled your sales. There's going to be a fulfillment issue because now we got to deliver on all this stuff that we're selling. So now we got to have the systems and the processes and so forth to actually install. So the beautiful thing with us, we've been able to design these systems in different areas. So now we can actually just install these systems into businesses, and now we can just customize them based on the nuance of that specific business.
Wow, man, this is just great information. But let's take it back to, because we were talking about the CEOs, but let's talk about the little man now. You know what I mean? Only been in business 3 or 4 years. The first year took a lot of losses. Starting to make a little revenue now, because you said the minimum that you would take would be 30,000.
So with us, it's not necessarily a revenue. They don't necessarily got to be at a certain level of revenue. Ideally, we want them to be in business doing some stuff that type. So it kind of depends. So we have some clients that come to us. Let's just use an example. So we have some clients that come to us and they're like, hey, I've been in corporate. I make six figures. I make $100,000, $200,000 in corporate. And I've been doing this thing on the side. Like I've been doing some coaching or some consulting on the side, and I want to take that to the next level. So those are some clients that we can actually help as well, right? We also have some clients who are like, listen, I got a business, I'm already doing 3, 4 million a year. I want to get to 10 million a year, but I got a cap on where we are, and we haven't been able to break through this, right? And then we got people who are already at 10,000. They're like, I'm at $10,000 a month. I want to get to $100,000 a month. But I'm making $10,000 a month. I'm working 100 hours a week, but I'm trying to figure out how do I do it without having to 10x my work hours. So it's not necessarily a revenue target specifically a certain amount that they have to be making. It's more of a situational like where they are personally.
And I was actually doing some research on you, and I found a clip when you were talking about how it's going to take forever to make 30,000, but you can make 30,000 in a month quicker than you can make it in a year. I was like, how are you going to do that? So I definitely want to talk about that on this show, because I'm sitting here like, how 30,000 in a year? Okay, I could. That's pretty simple. I mean, it may take a little more footwork to do it, but 30,000 in a month, in a week, it's like, I don't even know about that. So let's talk about that, man, because I thought that was very interesting.
It's easier to make a lot of money in a little bit of time than it is to make a little bit of money in a lot of time. So it's easier to make a lot of money in a little bit of time than it is to make a little bit of money in a lot of time, right? And we see this in legit business and illegitimate business, right? But let's just stay in the legit frame. So let's say if somebody works, let's just do the exact math. I'm gonna calculate that real quick. So let's say somebody want to make $30,000 a year, and then let's say they make $25 an hour, right? Let's just go with that. That means they gotta work 1,200 hours. So they work 1,200 hours. If they make $50 an hour, they gotta work 600 hours over a year. You follow me so far? And now this is before taxes. And of course, in the great country of America, we got this thing called taxes. But let's just say we didn't pay taxes, and you just got your whole 30,000. Let's just play with that. Now, let's say in business, let's say you have an agency, or let's say you're a consultant or whatever, and let's say you have a consulting package where you charge $5,000 a month. You only got to get six clients in a month. So you get six clients in a month that pay you 5,000. That's 30,000. Let's say you got a marketing agency, right? Or you provide podcasting services, or whatever your service is. And let's say you charge 10,000. Now you only got to get three clients. Three. Now, if you focused all of your mark, some people are like, man, well, 10,000. Well, if you focused on your marketing efforts and your day to day on getting one client a week that pays you $7,500, just one. You got five business days. If you focus six, let's call it 5 hours a day, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, 20 hours, and you focus that your marketing and your sales activity around getting one client to pay you $7,500. If you did that 4 times, that'll be $30,000 that you made, and that's only four clients. So that's $30,000 in a month. And here's the cool thing: let's say you invested 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. That's 25 hours, right? So that's 25 hours times four. That's 100 hours. So that's 100 hours for the month, and then you got four clients that pay you $7,500 for $30,000 versus 1,200 hours or 600 hours over a year. Does that make sense? We all make enough money, we just don't make it fast enough. So like every so everybody's gonna make a million for the most part. If you work, I think it's like if you make $25,000 a year for 40 years, you make $1 million. You just don't make it fast enough. So what if you could collapse that and you make that same million in a year? Or you could make that same million in 2 years versus 40 years. But the game they taught us was go to school, get a job, get good grades at college, go get a job for somebody else, work 40 years, get a pension, live on that pension, and for it to pay you before you die. But we all know that game, that been dead.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because I had a brother on last week out of corporate America, and he said he has a 3-year rule where every 3 years he looks for a new job, because he feels like if you stay on your job longer than that, you're underpaid. And I was just like, man, because the way I was raised, you go to school, go to college, be on that job 30 years, suck it up. Whatever's going on, just suck it up. Your family's taken care of. You got the nice house, the car, you good to go.
But think about it. It's kids that went into college this year, and now and I'm a proponent of education. I got kids; they're in school, so I think education. I think we just got to misconstrue. So think about it. It's kids that are going into careers that are going into college this year, freshman year, for careers that's not going to exist by the time they graduate, because AI is going to wipe it out. So it's like, but you think the government going to be like, hey, you know what? We'll wipe that college, we'll wipe that bill. No, they still going to pay that bill. So like we're really setting them up, because we're still telling them the same thing that our great 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 grandparents. Now at one point that worked, right? But even then, I know people who have a pension, and I know people who have a pension from way back then, but it's not enough, because with the cost of living increasing, like it's not enough. And then we weren't taught how to set up for an investments, and how do we leverage it, and you know, how do we do these different things. So it's like, you know, what do we do? So we all make more than enough money. Again, we just don't make it fast enough. And then we don't learn the other side of money, of like, once we make money, now what do we do with the money to actually keep the money, protect the money, and grow the money, which is a whole nother game.
Exactly. Well, that's why we do this show, man. We talk about generational wealth, and you definitely doing that. A family man, multi-millionaire man. First off, I'm gonna ask you the real hard question now, man. You
Okay.
enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays, brother?
Oh, 100%, 100%. I know they don't do anything on Sundays, man. So I'm definitely joining this.
Yeah, okay, great, man. But let's talk about generational wealth for you. You know, you're a family man. Because I try to ask all our guests about income streams. How many streams of income? And can you name them if you're cool with that? And then what are you doing to make sure that your children are gonna, be able to enjoy the wealth that you're building now?
So great question. I'm so glad you asked this. So on Sundays, so the only thing I really do on Sundays normally, I don't really do anything business with us on Sundays for the most part. All right. Generally speaking, we go to church, that type of thing, and chill out for the most part. So from a generational wealth standpoint, I used to personally always think that generational wealth was passing down financial assets to my kids. Money, houses, that stuff, right? When we was doing our estate planning with our estate attorney, she was saying like, at whatever time when you and your wife, 100 plus years from now, and y'all aren't here anymore, is everything just divided throughout the kids? Is that what we're doing? And I was like, no. And she was like, at what point is it just distributed? And I'm like, it's never just distributed. I'm like, it's gonna be set up in a trust, and our trustees, our kids can actually go holler at our trustees, and then if they present a specific plan, a certain amount can be allocated to go towards that. So if they're like, hey, I want to start this business, and they're like, hey, I got this business plan, and I'm looking to, here's the ROI plan, then I'm going to pay back into the trust based on this plan, and they can do that. Or they're like, hey, I'm going to college for this specific thing, they need access to this, so I can go do this. They got access to opportunity. But money's never just distributed. It's not like, hey, Pops passed and it was 20 millionaire or whatever, and it just got divided throughout the kids. It's like, no, because that just shuts you up. Because if you were listening and if you were paying attention while we were here, you wouldn't be in a situation where you would need that anyway. Does that make sense? You'll already be good, because you've been already implementing and taking advantage of the exposure, of the opportunities, of the connections, all that good stuff. But if you just sat around and was entitled the whole time, you set yourself up in a bad situation. But when you decide to get yourself together and you can present something to the trustees, then you got access. To me, true generational wealth is connections. Like if my kids can go somewhere and somebody can be like, oh, you Marquell's son, all your money ain't no good here. You good, we got you. That's generational wealth. Like that's a connection based on a relationships are generational wealth. Like there's no relationships that get you in the doors, money can never get you in, right? That's generational wealth. Like ways of thinking is generational wealth, right? Me introducing you to God and helping you develop a relationship with God, that's generational wealth, right? To like these insights, principles of sowing and reaping, right? Of treating people how you want to be treated. Right, those different, to me, that's generational wealth, and that can be like money, like most first generation millionaires or most first generational wealth builders. Typically, the money is gone after the second generation, before the second generation, because the real wealth wasn't passed down. Just the money was, and money is the lowest form of wealth. But if we don't pass down the real stuff, the money just, because think about it, the money just loses value anyway from generation to generation. Like when we used to go buy, I was telling, I did a series at my church like last 6 weeks, and when we was growing up, we can go get like four little bag of chips for we can go get like four bags of chips for $1, right? Those same bags of chips are $1.25 now, right? So the money it doesn't hold value, right? What holds real value is ways of thinking, identity, how you view yourself, principles, life lessons, connections, confidence. Those things are the real generational wealth. So to answer your question, the way that I'm doing that is continuing to, so one of the things me and my boy is doing in the morning, in the house, I got a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old. So we do affirmations. So that helps with identity, right? Who they are. Don't, when you know who you are, you ain't worrying about who nobody else tell you that you are, what nobody else say about you, because you already know who you are. Them seeing how I treat their mom, right? So I'm always working to be the best husband possible, right? So they can see what that looks like. That's generational wealth. Like when my granddad died, I was the last Russell, right? So I didn't grow up with a dad and none of that type of stuff, right? But I was so me being the man I am to my kids. That's generational wealth. I broke that cycle, right? My dad wasn't around. I'm not sure if his dad was around. I don't know. My granddad on my mom's side, I don't know if his dad was around. I don't really know the story, but I know my granddad sold drugs. And I know when he died, he didn't really have anything. His wife ended up starting smoking crack, right? And she sold all this stuff, right? It ain't no shade to her, but I was like, okay, I want something different. So I had my first son when I was young. I was 19. But I knew then, I was like, I ain't having no more kids until I get married, because I don't want a whole bunch of baby mamas. Right. So then when I got married, then I had more kids. Again, that's generational wealth. My kids seeing how I show up, right? And when they're out and somebody sees them and they know them because of me, they're good because of how I treat people and the reputation I built for myself, and that's something they can continue to build on. Now the money stuff, I show them how to make money, right? But again, my kids don't they're not when I came up, I had to make money to do certain things. They don't gotta do that. So they don't got the same drive. It used to frustrate me. I'd be like, man, why they don't got the same tribe, man? They don't get it, man. They ain't going for it. They're supposed to be go-getters, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, Marquell, they don't got to. They don't got to be go-getters. They didn't come up where you came from in the same environment. So it's different. So I showed them. They've had businesses and so forth and so on. They know we have a rule. With money, we do 10, 30, 30, 30. Never spend a whole dollar. That's a principle. So for every dollar you get, you put 10 towards tithe and giving. Right? You put 30% towards investing. You put 30% towards your business. Even if you don't got a business, put 30% just when you do start a business, 30% investing, and then you keep 30% in your pocket. And that's for just spending money. That's a principle. Never spend the whole dollar. Always have seed, right? Because if you always sowing seed are always going to produce a harvest. But if you eat the seed, you can't produce a harvest. So installing those type of things and living those type of things, that's how I'm equipping them with generational wealth. And if they do what they're supposed to do, they'll have access to other opportunity based on what we're building. Otherwise, it'll just stay, continue to compound, and it'll pass them over to the next generation, or eventually it'll go to some other organizations or whatever that can actually, use it. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That makes perfect sense. I've never had anybody come on the show and break it down like that. I'm loving that.
For sure.
That was a gem. Our show is full of gems. Brothers be dropping
Yeah.
gems. You dropping gems all day.
And
So
let me ask you another question, right? Because I didn't want to breeze over and I can't hear you. You asked me about multiple streams of income, right? And here's one thing I want to understand and I want to hit on, because a lot of times people tell people that multiple streams of income is how you get rich, and it's actually not. multiple, hopefully that's my right note. If somebody's listening to my voice, they don't get anything else. Like multiple, and I had to learn this, multiple streams of income is a tool of the rich, not a tool to get rich. Multiple streams of income is a tool of the rich to get, not to get rich. A lot of times people think they need multiple streams of income and it just becomes a distraction and they can't get focused on anything. If you think about it, if you think about you, just the term streams, if you think about a stream, a river stream, if you think about a lake, if you think about any smaller body of water, it all comes from what? A big body of water, right? So if you focus on building a big body of water, from a big body of water, small streams are just gonna break off of it automatically. You don't even gotta try, right? So for example, I speak at events, but I've done that because who I what I built as a consultant. So I'm a consultant that speaks, but I don't gotta speak to make money. Does that make sense? So I can actually go in and speak for free, but because I go in and speak for free and create value, that's gonna turn into money. But I'm not necessarily promote myself out because I'm trying to build, because I'm trying to fill my calendar up with speaking gigs. Because like I told you from the very, very beginning of this conversation, one of the things that I optimize for, when we talked about the optimization conversation, one of the things I optimize for is time with family, right? So I track. What's important to me is how many days I wake my kids up in the morning, get them ready for school. How many days am I home when they get home? How many days am I home when they and I put them to bed and we pray together and we talk about our wins? Like how many dope, like that's what I'm optimizing for. So I don't want to be on the road speaking. That's not against nobody who want to be on the road speaking. That's just kind of what I'm optimizing for. However, speaking is a stream that I can tap into, right? Books are a stream, right? Because all these things just broke off. Now, one of my biggest focuses to really simplify this for business owners and like, okay, how do I tie this together? We want to take active income, and we take that active income and then we turn it into passive income, like true passive income. So, for example, that active income may look like the business generating X amount of revenue and then X amount of revenue going into like an investment portfolio, for example, could be the S&P 500. So, like, I don't like to do high risk investments, right? So, some people do like crypto and they do a lot of like high risk different things. And that's cool. I ain't saying there's nothing wrong with that. However, business is risky enough. The majority of my risk lives in business. So it's like the investment side, I want it to be, now, nothing is 100%, but I want it to be as minimal risk as possible, even if it's just smaller returns over time. Because I just want mine to compound over time. Does that make sense? And that may be something simple like the S&P 500. Right, the S&P 500, you're getting you about 10% a year on average. Like I know the stock market is crazy right now, so we're just kind of on the sidelines, just seeing what's what. But it'll pass. But what we know over the past 50 to 100 years, the S&P 500 on average produces about 10% year over year. Does that make sense? So I just want to be in something super conservative. We grow the business. That's what we're going to get cash flows from. We're going to take that and then we're going to put it. And I know a lot of people do real estate. I've done some real estate. We got a piece of real estate. We got a property that we bought a new house and we rented another one out. So we got that coming in. But it's like, I don't want a crazy portfolio that I got to manage. I would get into like some other ones where other individuals are managing and I'm part of it, that type of thing. But it's like, I like to be conservative on the passive side. So it compounds. So over the next 10 years or so, the what my investment portfolio spits out, it covers my ideal lifestyle. Right, because I ain't looking to retire. I never want to retire. Right, retirement ain't even biblical. So I never want to retire. At least at this point, I do want to be optional, right? Which I'm pretty optional now, but I enjoy what I do. So like having this conversation with you, I could do this, all night, right? So working with entrepreneurs, I love it. Teaching is literally what God put me here to do, right? So I have no desire when I'm 70, 80, 90, 100 years old, I'll still be empowering entrepreneurs. Doing my thing, traveling, and enjoying this thing. You know what I'm saying? But while that's happening, the conservative investments that I started 70 years ago will be covering the lifestyle. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah,
So that's
man.
how I look at the multiple streams. The multiple streams for me is not me trying to do a whole lot of things. Now we also do on the private equity side, getting partnership in other businesses that we consult who we find as good partners. And now I can actually get profits from businesses that I got partnership in, but I ain't like in the day-to-day on the org chart of those businesses. So again, that's passive. That's kind of semi-passive because I'm not involved in it. But of course, business is risky. So you also, you never know.
Well, hey, Markquell Russell, man, thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. We're definitely gonna have to bring you back on the show because I have a few more things I want to discuss with you. But you know, I kind of wanted to welcome the Black Men Sunday audience to
Yeah, man.
Markquell Russell, brother. So
I'm
thanks
ready
for
when
coming
you're
on the
ready.
show.
I'm ready whenever you're ready. Let's do it.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put Black Man Sunday.